Greetings and welcome to Bird on a Wire, a podcast series presented by the Recombobulation Area and hosted by Lou Ann Bird, featuring conversations on hope, civility, and action. Thank you for joining us. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm the founder of the Recombobulation Area and the producer of this podcast series. For episode 5 of the Bird on a Wire podcast series, Lou Ann is joined by Dr. Catherine Wilkinson. Dr. Wilkinson is a resident of the district where Lou Ann ran for assembly, and they met while Lou Ann was campaigning and knocking on doors. Wilkinson is a doctor and a surgeon who has treated victims of gun violence, and that has inspired her to get involved in efforts to pass gun safety legislation. In this podcast, they talk about the work they are continuing to do, not only to advance gun violence prevention bills, but combat the fatalistic attitudes on gun reform. It's an important conversation. The lead sponsor for the Bird on a Wire podcast series is Civic Media, the fastest growing hometown radio network in Wisconsin, broadcasting local news, talk, sports, music, and sensible commentary throughout the state. Visit civicmedia.us to find your local station and tune in to your community. Civic Media, hometown radio refreshed. Supporting sponsors for this series include Marianne Lubar and Marlene Ott. So without further ado, here's Lou Ann Bird.
Welcome to Bird on a Wire, episode number 5. I'm Lou Ann Bird, your host for this podcast series. And I'm here today with a very special friend that I met when I was knocking on doors, Dr. Catherine Wilkinson. Just to back up a little bit, we are doing this podcast series as a way of continuing the conversations we had when I ran for public office. We conversations about hope, civility, and action, and what we all can do to change this broken political system and get things done that matter. So with that little background, I want to talk with Catherine about some things. I had knocked on her door. Right? And you were not home, but I talked to your husband.
Correct, yep.
And met your daughter.
Yep.
And did my little spiel about running, and I'll let you take it from there. The next thing you know, I'm getting a donation from her, and then a little while later, I got contacted by Catherine. She wanted to come out and do doors with me, so I'll tell you more about that. But what was the message that you heard about me?
Well, I had been wanting to find a way to do something about gun violence in Wisconsin, and I was talking to my friend Sophie, and she said, well, really the answer is to work on your local elections, because if we can flip some seats, including where you are, then maybe we can get some bills through our local Senate. And I was like, oh, local elections, those are important. And it was literally the next day that you came to my house, and I came home, and Joe had said, oh, this lady was at our door. She's running for some election. And I looked you up, and I kind of got a little bit of background and understanding, because we had just moved in May to our new house in Greenfield. And I thought, oh, this lady has a shot, and I think that she would support common sense gun legislation. And so I did the easiest thing at the time, which was make a donation, because I really wanted to support your campaign and give you a shot. And then my friend Sophie was like, you know, you really can do more than that. And I was like, you're right.
I gotta meet her sometime.
And so I
gotta thank her sometime. Yeah.
After I'd made the donation, you'd reached out and called me and asked me what was important, and I just thought that was just the coolest thing ever. I told all my friends that you'd called me to talk about what was important to me, because that was really my first interaction with our government or politics in my life, you know.
Wow. That's powerful.
I went to see Obama talk when he ran for president, and that was, besides meeting you, that was the closest I'd probably ever been to a political figure. And so that when you called to ask me what was important, I was just really astounded, and I thought, wow, local elections really do matter. And I didn't really understand that before. And especially when I said, you know, I'm interested in universal background checks and safe gun storage around minors. And you said, those things sound great. I would be happy to work on those things if I was elected. I said, well, we got to get you elected.
So then you contacted me about knocking on doors, and I'm like, sure, come on out with me. I really didn't know much about your background or what you did. Do you want to tell us that? And then when she starts talking to this voter at the door, that first one, I was like, wow, she knows her stuff. So you tell me, tell the listeners what you do, and tell us what you do.
So I'm a general surgeon in Milwaukee, and what that means is that I take care of patients that have acute injuries. In Milwaukee, most victims of gunshots or firearm violence go to Frederick, which is the level one trauma center in town. And that's kind of a way that they group care so that they just have the resources available for those patients at one time. And that's where I did my training. So I took care of a lot of victims of gun violence during my training at Frederick Hospital. And I still see some of those patients at the hospital I work at now in Milwaukee, because they continue to have complications of those things that we then take care of at our hospital, or sometimes they show up at our door and then they need to be transferred to Frederick for further care. And I have continually thought, ever since I started taking care of victims of gun violence, that so much of what has happened to them has been out of their control, and that we as a society have failed these 18-year-old boys that are getting shot on the streets, and that we need to be doing more as a community to protect our youth and to be addressing this kind of epidemic. And most of these kids never make the news.
So tell me, how is it out of their control? Because a lot of people think, just lock them up. But what are you seeing with these kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're 18 and you get shot, there's been a lot of life circumstances and life decisions that have gotten you to that point. You know, maybe you don't have a safe place at home. Maybe you don't have enough to eat and you're getting involved in crime in order to fill your stomach. You know, maybe you're at a school that doesn't have enough time and attention to address your behavioral needs because you haven't been raised in a secure environment. And I think that especially, you know, through late teenage years, you know, even probably to 2022, you know, everyone says that your brain is not fully mature till you're 26. And there are these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids getting sucked up into gun violence and dying or getting shot multiple times by the time they're 20, 21. Mm. And I think that is a failing of our society to give them the resources to grow up in a way that helps them avoid that.
So what did you have in mind in terms of solutions that you saw, and what's happening on those?
Yeah, so it's a really big problem that people think and feel is insurmountable, or that we can't do anything about it. People have been trying to pass common sense gun legislation for decades at both the federal and the state level, and if it was easy, it would already have happened. But I also think that kind of fatalistic attitude has made it feel even more impossible. And sadly, with each mass shooting, I mean, Uvalde was kind of just this past spring, there gains more and more momentum. I asked a bunch of the most conservative people I could find what kinds of common sense gun legislation they would support, and all of them supported universal background checks. And so I thought that would be a place to start. And even here in Milwaukee, there was the Brookfield Spa shooting a few years ago, where a man had a restraining order against his wife, you know, had committed acts of violence against her, and was able to buy a gun on the internet and then ultimately kill her, where if that internet gun sale had required a background check, she maybe wouldn't have died. And so given that I found a lot of conservative people that really supported that one thing, I thought, well, maybe that's what I will work on.
Well, and when I met you, you had a list.
Well, there's three bills.
But that didn't come out right away. So we're standing at a door, and this person happened to be conservative. That was the very first door we go to, and I don't know anything about Catherine. She knows nothing about me. And she was so able to right away start to talk about her experiences in the trauma area and as a surgeon and what she's seeing and what simple bills could be. You call them low-hanging fruit, things that will not take away guns, but things that you're seeing could make a difference in saving lives. And this guy really responded to that. Well, after he asked you how old you were, you run into some interesting things at the doors. Like, he didn't believe her. But anyway, that's when I started learning the what is possible and what we could do, too, by listening to you talk about what you see. So those low-hanging fruits really are simple. Like you said, universal background checks. That's not taking guns away.
The other two bills that all of the... So last year in the... I can't remember what the exact year of the last session of the assembly was. Democrats had introduced multiple gun bills that never made it out of committee. And so that was the list that I started with that I asked my conservative friends, like, would you be supportive of this one, this one? So there were three that all of them supported. And those were, that's my list of three bills. One is universal background checks. One is that every time you buy a gun, it has to come with a gun lock, which, come on, capitalism. We should get some gun lock company to lobby for that bill. And the third is safe gun storage.
And yes.
All of these bills don't really cost the consumer any money. They don't take away any guns. They don't restrict any guns that people already own. But they are, there's data from different states that have passed these bills showing that it reduces gun deaths.
So when did you start working on these bills? Before you met me or since you met me? What?
It's kind of been a
timing
process. So last August, just really felt like I had to do, I just felt the call to do something, but I didn't know what or how to do it. So I started talking to, you know, the Wisconsin Medical Society and my professional society as a physician and my friends that are trauma surgeons at Freightard and my friends that are other places and gun owners. And it was my friend Sophie who was like, this is, well, first you got to try to get people elected and then we have to try to lobby the people that do get elected. And so, I mean, you're the first politician I've ever gotten to know.
So you were
really
working on these bills
experience.
Last fall. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I wouldn't say working. I would say I was starting to gather information and kind of figure out how in the world to accomplish anything in Wisconsin in 2023.
So not everybody goes to the length you're going to. What is it that's driving you to do this?
That's a great question. I guess I feel a responsibility as a physician who's taken care of so many victims of gun violence to do something more to prevent it. I mean, there's some story, maybe you can edit this to make it more smoother, about, you know, pulling people out of the river and you have to go upriver and find out who's throwing the people in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it that way about gun violence in Wisconsin, especially when I was at Freightard. You know, so many of the trauma surgeons are just so busy pulling people out of the river that now that I don't work at a level one trauma center, I feel I've got a little bit more bandwidth to say, well, we need to stop throwing people into the river.
And how can we stop that?
And how can we stop
some
that?
Common sense gun measures that you see could save lives. And you were particularly interested in our youth,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And these young kids that even though they're 18 and they look like grown-ups,
right,
really aren't yet.
Yeah. And, you know, we can get into the racism and how, you know, a lot of black and brown youth look and are mistaken to be a lot older than they are. And I think that contributes to how they're treated and the kind of the violence that happens to them.
Okay.
But even just in Milwaukee, there was a 5-year-old boy that got access to a gun and shot himself and died just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And someone was just asking me, you know, if there's a law that says that you have to store your gun safely, like, is that enforced? Does it cost money? Like, how does that actually reduce deaths? And I said, you know, that's a good question. I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you that I have a friend who, when they had a baby, had a big fight with their in-laws and said, hey, we're not going to bring our baby over to your house unless you store your guns safely. Because they were a big hunting family, always had lots of guns. And they said, well, nothing ever happened with our guns when you know, your spouse was a kid. Like, why do you think something would happen to your baby? And my friend was like, no, this is just non-negotiable. We're not bringing our baby to your house if you don't store your guns safely. You know, you can imagine all the conflict and hard feelings that had. And I could just say that, you know, if we had a law in Wisconsin that you had to store your guns safely if there were going to be minors in your home, then my friend wouldn't have had to have all that family drama.
Mm-hmm.
She could have just said, well, it's the law now. You know, you store your guns safely, follow the law, and we will bring our kid over. It would have been so much smoother, I think, for that family navigating mm-hmm. that. And I mm-hmm. think that even though the other states that have these laws don't necessarily like send cops checking that you've stored your guns safely or anything like that, I do think it kind of sets a tone for what the expectation is. And I think that slowly that makes it a change. And mm-hmm. I think it is shown that as states pass laws requiring safe gun storage, less kids get access to firearms. And that's not just accidental shootings like in Milwaukee 2 weeks ago. It's also teenage suicides are significantly reduced.
News this morning, 5 shootings in Milwaukee last night. Oh. Again, 5 shootings. So you mentioned the word fatalist attitude before. What's the fatalist attitude that we're all kind of stuck in? That we can't get it done? That it's too hard? What is the fatalist attitude?
I think people don't think that anything can be done about gun safety in the United States.
Why?
Because people have tried and failed before. And I think that people consider the NRA too powerful to do anything about it.
Okay.
The other thing I think stops people is that they say, well, just because we pass a law in Wisconsin about XYZ, you know, people can go to Minnesota or Michigan, et cetera, and buy guns. You know, right now, Illinois actually has a lot tighter gun laws than Wisconsin. And so maybe people are coming to Wisconsin to buy guns. I don't really know any of the data about that. But I think people are hesitant to do anything on a state level because if your neighbors aren't doing it, it feels like it's not going to make a difference. And I don't think that's true at all. And that's not what the data shows.
So I'm just going to tag on that for our listeners right away, because examine your own thoughts and feelings about this. Are you thinking about it's hopeless, or do you see a glimmer of hope in making these kind of changes? I'm glad you said that fatalist attitude, because I think too many of us have that and we sit back and we don't take the actions we might need to take. Although I think it's personal. I do think that in each of our worlds, we see things. We bring experiences, we bring passions, we bring caring. And those are the things I think we all need to take action on. So Catherine and I meet, and now we're out talking. And by the way, I just want to add that I knocked on 4,000 doors. And the issues I heard about, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they all said the same thing when it came to guns. They all, you know, I'm a Second Amendment rights person because I do believe we have a right to bear arms. We all agreed on that part, but then when it came to, but keeping guns out of the wrong hands, they said, I heard ban assault rifles so many times. Mm-hmm. We need to get mm-hmm. rid of those weapons of war that are out there. Mm-hmm. I heard background checks would be great and gun locks would be great. Those are the things, and storage, all of those things I heard about that anyone at the doors would support. I was really surprised at how universally supported those bills were. So we get through the election and I lose by just 2%, but I got 49% of the vote. And I forget how our communication happened. I think you reached out to me though and said, can we still work on these bills? One of us reached out to the other one. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, we can, because I got 49% of the vote and I know people now. So
I feel like you wrote a very beautiful email after you'd lost the election. And I think I replied and said, you know, so sad that you lost.
Yeah.
I'm planning on still working on this. If you want to join me, let me know. And then you said, let's do it. I've set up a meeting with Bob.
So that's what we did.
That's what we did.
We set up a meeting with Bob Donovan. Now who does that? Right? But I think thinking that through, the election's over. And for me, my work on civility, hope, and action wasn't just about an election, but it is about creating the change we need to do to make our society better, and particularly for victims of gun violence. I mean, I'm not up on that. I mean, I'm up on people with disabilities because I have a disabled husband. I'm up on education because I served on school boards for years. But this violence thing in Milwaukee is huge. And it's also good timing to talk about it with Bob Donovan caring about safety. So none of us knew how this was going to go, right?
No.
So I set up the meeting, and you bring along a bunch of your surgeon friends.
Yep. Yeah, it was really fun. It was also just interesting because, you know, we had just moved to Greenfield and we had just lived in Milwaukee when Bob had run for mayor. And so we'd watched all the debates, and I'd never heard of him before because we haven't lived in Milwaukee area for too long. And then we moved to Greenfield, and he moves to Greenfield, and he's running in another election in our new district. And so I had gotten an impression of him from his mayoral debates.
Sure.
And my impression was that he was very conservative, very old school, and that public safety and increasing police funding was a big priority for him. And so I really didn't know what to expect when we were going to meet with him. But
me either.
But we did. And I brought along one of my partners, who's another general surgeon at the hospital I work at. And then I brought along a trauma surgeon from Fredert, who's a veteran and just a really wonderful guy. And then I brought all the data I could think of that could possibly convince somebody.
So you're doing a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm using my network of people that I know from the election to try to move this legislation forward. And I'll just tell you, so here we are, we're sitting at Zeb's, right? It's Bob's favorite restaurant, and we're all having this conversation about guns and, you know, listening to his concerns about, you know, the policing side of it. And then he listened to your concerns and the trauma, and he looked at the data, and he and Catherine's got this list of bills. This is, and of all these things, these three are the easiest that we could maybe get through.
Yeah.
So Bob leaves, and then these bills, by the way, had been introduced last session.
Yeah.
And Bob leaves the conversation. He's going to think about it or whatever, and he comes back into the restaurant. And he said, could you find out why these bills never came to committee? Yeah. Which told us, it sent a message that he cares, that he wants to look into this. And we were all caught off guard, you know.
Well, the very last question I'd asked him is, I said, you know, I'd presented all this data, all these things. And I'd said, you know, Representative Donovan, do you think you'd consider voting for any of these bills if they came up this session? And what I remember Representative Donovan saying was, you know what? I would consider sponsoring these bills. And that just totally floored me, because I think the level of, you know, commitment you have to have something to sponsor something versus just, all I was asking him was, you know, would you maybe vote yes? And he was like, you know, maybe I would even sponsor this bill.
See, there's hope.
And then he left, and then he came back with more questions, and
it
was really cool.
So since that time, Bob, we have, well, actually, it was after that conversation when the 5-year-old in Milwaukee shot himself. And we jumped on that right away and sent, and that was our first, I think, my first written communication with Bob about it. I said, Bob, here's a little boy's life that could have been saved had we had this gun locks.
Safe gun storage
bill in place. What does that require? The safe gun bills. How does that go?
So it's two different bills. One bill requires with every sale of a firearm, you provide a gun lock or a safe gun storage, or, you know, so you either have to sell the gun with the gun safe or you have to sell the gun with a gun lock. And the other bill is that if there are minors in your home, that you store that gun either in a gun safe or with a gun lock or other form of safe gun
storage. And it doesn't require everybody to lock their guns up.
Not everybody. No, only if there's
minors. Just when there's minors in the home. Okay. Yeah. So those sound so reasonable to me. And we sent that message off to Bob. And in the meantime now, we're both reaching out to Senator Bradley to try to get a meeting with him. And you have been, tell us what else you've been doing. Because you've been doing more than that.
Well,
I know you have.
It's very slow progress, but I've been trying to work with other physicians I know to meet with their representatives. But, you know, scheduling for physicians can be very challenging, and same with representatives. So I actually had one of the surgeons that came with us, Dr. Somburg, I'd had a meeting set up with him and his representative, Representative Bradgen.
Okay.
And then one of them canceled at the last minute, and so I haven't been able to reschedule them. But I'm just reaching out to surgeons I know and seeing if I can get them to talk to their representatives, because I think these are common sense things that the majority of Americans, according to lots of polls, agree with. And hopefully we can remind our representatives that.
So to answer Bob Donovan's question, I did reach out to the minority assembly, minority leader. I believe she's also a sponsor on the bill. There were several co-sponsors, maybe. Yeah. And she said it didn't come out of committee because the Republicans, Bob's party, didn't want to bring it to the floor. So I was able to, you know, get that message back to Bob about that. And so he's new, and he's, you know, working on lots of bills that he's been introducing. Mm-hmm. Not lots that he's introduced, but, you know, signing on to or co-sponsoring or whatever. And then he held a listening session yesterday here in Hales Corners, which I found out about. So I was able to go. It was just three of us there. So it was just a little private little meeting with Representative Donovan. And he was asking us, what is it that you would like to see in the budget? And so we could talk about those things. And we talked about education being a top priority. But I was able to just directly go right up to him earlier and say, the gun legislation, we'd really like to see that get through this time. So, you know, reaching out to him again face-to-face like that, he said, well, we'll see, we'll see. You know, nothing's happening yet, but I think it's that kind of public pressure. And now he's got two more listening sessions coming up that you intend to.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe I will. No, I can't that day. There's a big rally in Milwaukee, but you intend to do. So we're just keeping the conversation going.
Yeah.
And so I was going to tell you this now. At the listening session, Bob was telling us that there's a group of people in Greenfield that want to see a sound barrier put up along the highway. And they held a meeting, and 100 people showed up at that meeting. So this is something that Bob Donovan is putting time into, is getting a sound barrier put up along 894 so that these people's backyards aren't so noisy. It's been that way for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So we talked about that, and then we talked about, I told him I had reached out to him. Our library is not wheelchair accessible here in Hales Corners, and people do it all the time. There's $7 million extra dollars out there that are supposedly a lot of money that they can now figure out what to do with, a surplus, which just doesn't happen very often. So I'm like, Bob, what about getting us a couple million, just whatever you could get us for the library, and we'll fundraise the rest? Because it's an old building, it needs an elevator, and mm-hmm. the village of Hales Corners is dragging their feet on it. They're not doing anything about it. So we're at the meeting and we're talking about all these different issues, and I finally said to Bob, I said, well, Bob, how is it that you prioritize what you're going to work on? What are, you know, how do you decide that? And he said, well, if you have a meeting and 100 people show up, that means something. So for our listeners out there, organizing and bringing your people to the issue makes a difference. And that's what Catherine's doing. She's organizing the trauma surgeons, right?
Trying.
And it doesn't really have to be a lot of people, but it has to be vocal people and people that have gotten over their fatalist attitude and believe that we can actually get this changed, because that's where it starts. And I'm so grateful for the work you're doing. So what's coming up this week now?
So this week, my friend Sophie, who's a internist in Madison, and I and a few other physicians are going to meet with Representatives Andreka and Stubbs in Madison. And the two of them were co-sponsors of these three bills last session. It's interesting, you know, there's about 11 bills introduced last session, and they all have a different variety of Democratic co-sponsors. And so even just between the three bills, not everybody that sponsored one of them sponsored all three. And so we're just planning to meet with them and make sure that they've talked to Representative Donovan, and that if there are any likely targets they think across the aisle that we could try to organize physicians in that district to reach out to, and to see how we can kind of get these things out of committee. And
we have to get them on the agenda again and get them in a hearing in the committees so they can get voted on for legislation. And Bob Donovan has to have a conversation with his chair, with the assembly leader, which would be Robin Voss. So these conversations, these relationships have to be built in order to get this kind of legislation that most people think cannot be passed. So we're going to continue to work together on this, right? And get this done. So I have invited myself to the meeting with Representative Andreka. It just so turns out I have some extra time this week, and I will be able to go with Catherine to Madison and be a part of that conversation. And then we will follow up with emails. It's that squeaky wheel that gets the grease. That's how we get this done. But I will say it's not about, quote, remembering what it's really about helps, not, quote, gun control or gun reforms. It is about saving lives. And Catherine, you know, you see it. You see the impact of gun violence in Milwaukee. So if these, and we see children dying all too often in Milwaukee, and you have the data that shows that if we can get these bills passed, where is this working? Where are you seeing this type of legislation working?
Oh, I didn't bring my notes, of the papers I brought for Representative Donovan, you know, they grade every state based on their child access protection laws, one of which is a safe storage law like this. And so the states that have those, of which I probably can't name.
You don't have to have the data, but...
Those states have fewer child deaths.
They do. And you can prove that through this research.
Yeah.
So it isn't like we're making this stuff up, folks. We aren't. We're looking at the research, we're looking at the data, and we're figuring out how we can make our voices known so that we can get something done for the people in this district. So,
and the whole state. I mean, the gun violence is the worst in Milwaukee, but I was just at a Moms Demand Action meeting yesterday, and Milwaukee has the highest per capita gun violence, but the next three counties in Wisconsin... are all very rural, and a lot of those, you know, guns are the leading killer of kids, higher than motor vehicle crashes today. You know, some of that is teen suicide with gun access, some of that is accidental shootings, but it's every county in Wisconsin is affected.
Wow.
Not just Milwaukee.
So who is this other group you're meeting with?
Moms Demand Action is another advocacy group working on gun safety legislation. And so they're really focused on electing candidates that will support common sense gun legislation. And so right now they're very, very mobilized to help Justice Janet. We practiced last night at our meeting saying her last name, and now
Protasiewicz.
Protasiewicz.
That's okay.
That's okay. To help
her get elected.
Justice Protasiewicz get elected, because that would make a big difference when bills go in front of the Supreme Court. And so Moms Demand Action, you know, I was looking for something just a little different than what that organization is focused on, but I've definitely still found it valuable to be a part of it. But, you know, very much about canvassing for Mandela Barnes and all of the candidates. They're a part of Every Town, which is a different advocacy organization, and they rate candidates. Did you do this when you were running? Because next time you should. You can get a rating as a common sense gun law candidate or something like that. And then they will help support you.
I'll do that.
And put you on their list.
I'm in.
So there's a special election kind of on the north side of Milwaukee, Whitefish Bay area maybe?
Yes. Yeah, there's a Senate race open right now.
A Senate race there. And so that one of the candidates is an Every Town common sense.
That would be Jody Sinek. I think is her name.
That sounds right.
So we are all working to try to get her elected as well.
Yeah.
So backing up, well, not backing up, but just the reality of the situation in Wisconsin is that the district, this is what's affecting gun violence and this fatalist attitude as well. The district lines have been drawn in such a way that the assembly holds 2/3, almost to a supermajority.
Almost a supermajority.
They're only now 2 seats away in the assembly from having a supermajority, which gives them the power in the assembly to do just about anything they want. And then in the Senate, this single seat that's open right now will tip the balance toward either the Republicans get a supermajority if they win this seat, or they don't. So it's a very important seat. And why are these seats important? We have a Democratic governor who is able to veto some of this crazy legislation that has come down the pipe. And right now, if the Republicans get this supermajority, then they can do just about anything that takes away the governor's power. Now, how does the governor get elected in this state? He gets over 50% of the vote because this is a purple state. And there's just as many Democrats as Republicans. It's very close. But because of the way the lines are gerrymandered, we don't have fair maps. And the Republicans control everything. So one of the ways to, again, take our fatalist attitudes and change that is to get the Supreme Court race flip that, because right now we have it's not partisan, but there are conservative views and there are Democratic views, right? And so there's these four conservatives on the court right now, mm-hmm. and they have approved these maps based on this idea that they were the least changed from the maps before, which were very gerrymandered to begin with. So they made this decision on a 4-3 vote last spring, right before the elections were heating up. So the lines settled into not what the Democratic governor proposed, but what the Supreme Court said was the least changed. That makes no sense to democracy. We need fair maps in this state. And so that's rolled into a lot of our efforts right now to get people elected, so that we can get these kinds of common sense, every kind of legislation, right. Passed and have more of a balance, have people's votes count in Wisconsin. Because right now, in the majority of districts, they don't. So, right?
Yeah.
It's gerrymandered so poorly that it is discouraging people from voting.
Right. And I think it's part of the reason that I didn't think local elections were important, because my perception was, oh, the majority of your district wins every time, so it doesn't matter how you feel.
So how did it feel to vote for someone in a district where it could have been flipped?
It felt very empowering. It really felt like my vote mattered, and getting my neighbors and friends to the polls, like all that felt like it mattered.
We really need everybody to get on board now and start contacting whatever little thing you can do to create some action toward the issues you all care about. Not everyone can do what we're doing, like meeting with legislators and going down to Madison.
No, everybody can.
Everybody could. That's true.
Yeah.
I'm glad you challenged me on that fatalist attitude I have.
Yeah. And the representatives come back to their district. So even if you
that's
can't travel,
right.
you can meet
contact
with them in
them.
Your own district. They do Zoom meetings.
That's a really good point.
Everyone can meet with the representative. And everybody can say universal background checks are important to them.
And I'll tell you why that's important. Get to know your representative. That's right. No matter where you live. Because then when you contact them about these legislators, you're on a first name basis and they know who you are. Because people used to ask me that when I was, I'm with the League of Women Voters. They'd say, what's the best way to contact my legislator? Should I email them? Should I, make a phone call? What is the best way? And I would always say this. Have coffee with them. That's the best way. Because then, once they know who you are and they know you're paying attention, doesn't matter. You can call them, you can send them an email. They're going to, oh, that's Lou Ann. Now, that could be good or bad, depending on. But it is very important that we get in there. And this election coming up is so important. And there's statistics show that it's low turnout in spring elections. But if, I don't know. Podcast might get out after the election, but there's lots of elections coming up, so just make sure that you're involved, make sure that what's coming up.
I have to go absentee vote today because I'm on call the day of the election, and you can't guarantee that you'll make it.
So that's another issue, is making sure that people can vote and that it's easy to vote and that we don't discourage voting. So there's lots of issues. So I just want to say thank you, Catherine. We will keep you posted, right, of our progress.
Yes.
And we hope to get this legislation passed.
And email Luann and she can get you in touch with me if you're interested in more information about meeting with your legislator.
Laters. That'd be great. And then we can, I'll get those bills up on somewhere on my website, on my social medias and website at some point.
Sounds great.
We do need to make this a thing, a more formal thing. So thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for the work you're doing every day to try to save lives. It's really powerful. And thank you for caring. And thank you all for listening. We will stay tuned. We'll see you for our next podcast.
Thank you for having me, Luann.
You're welcome.